Now, we've been hearing a lot about Airbnb and stays and all the other short-term holiday letting platforms. And finally, the government has come out with its proposals for the regulations to cover them. I'm here with Jane Hearn, who's a lawyer and the deputy chair of the Owners Corporation Network, who've been all over this issue. They got us the legislation that we have, which is not great, but it's the best in Australia. I'm Jimmy Thompson. This is the Flat Chat Wrap. Hello, Jane.
Hi, Jimmy.
So the three things that have come out in the proposal and up for discussion are the register, the code of conduct, and fire safety. But you are really focused much deeper than that, and that's on the planning laws that came in, are already there, they just haven't been activated yet. So what are your concerns?
Well, let's just backtrack a little bit to explain what's happened is, the bylaw power has actually already been passed and is sitting on the statute book. That will allow people to prohibit short-term letting in their residential apartment block by non-resident owners.
Can they do that now?
Yes, they can. But on the planning law of things, which is a really important part of this story, we are really facing quite radical change. In fact, it really is radical change. It's not an objective of strata housing in New South Wales to further the tourist economy of New South Wales. That's actually an objective in Queensland, but not in New South Wales. So the planning laws that they're proposing is to make short-term letting in all residential dwellings, including residential apartment blocks, to be classified as what's called an exempt development. And that simply means that you don't have to have a development consent to do it. Now, traditionally, we say that unhosted short-term letting is no different to any other type of service department, and that the reason we have strategic planning in New South Wales is to separate incompatible uses. So I just want to lay that out at the beginning as the starting point, because that will give you, I think, a sense of just how radical this change is. Essentially, what they're saying is that you can have a residential apartment block in a residential zone. The DA says a residential use. Service departments will be prohibited in that zone. But with a stroke of a pen, otherwise known as a state environment planning policy, which is executive,
right,
not parliamentary, that protection has been stripped away so that a person could use the apartment, I could use my apartment, for unhosted short-term letting. One of the limits to try and contain this so that it doesn't become commercial is to use what we call day caps, and they're used around the world.
Yeah.
Most jurisdictions will have a day cap of around 60 or 90 days.
So that's the maximum number of nights,
yes,
that the property can be let to holiday lets.
Yes, right. That's right. And the purpose of the day caps, or night caps, is to act as an economic lever to try and contain the use of residential dwellings for short-term letting to what you might call genuine home sharing.
Yeah.
So, of course, what's happened, and I think this is abundantly clear now around the world, that what is promoted as home sharing, so it might be you and I go away, you might go away for a 6-week holiday and decide to let your apartment while you're away.
Yeah.
Or you might have somebody come to stay, 3 or 4 nights a month. That's home sharing. What we have now, and New South Wales is, I think, illustrating this very clearly, is huge commercial pressure on the residential sector to give them access to housing stock, which is our homes,
yep,
so that they can run short-term letting businesses from our residential apartment blocks. That's, yep, it in a nutshell. The 180 days is very generous. It's excessive. It's one of the most generous in the world. And now that we've read the proposed planning instrument, we find that there's already a loophole. And this is a direct result of pushback from the industry. So 180, and this is not explained in the discussion paper, and if you don't know planning law, it will not be clear from the instrument. But essentially it's this: short-term letting for 180 days will be exempt. But that doesn't stop you from going to council and getting approval to do more than 180 days of unhosted short-term letting. You can do that with development consent. But there's also another loophole where you might even be able to manage your business full time without having to go to council. And that's what we're calling the 21-day let loophole,
right,
which is completely new. We hadn't seen it before. It's the result of lobbying, obviously, in the last 12 months. So the draft state environment policy introduces this completely new category of unhosted short-term letting that evades the 180-day cap completely. These types of lets, which are 21 days consecutive or more, will not be subject to the 180-day cap. Right. So if I'm a landlord, let's say I'm a landlord and I've got two or three apartments, Coogee and Bondi,
yep,
I can run my business as a combination of short-term and medium-term letting. I can do that in a block that doesn't have a bylaw. If it's got a bylaw, I can't. But if right, if I'm in a block where there are other investors, they probably won't have a bylaw. I will be able to do that essentially. Well, I don't think it will be difficult to see that you could be running that for an entire year with no need to have development consent.
Presumably there are councils who would be quite favourable to unlimited short-term letting because exactly, they're interested in revenue and the rest of it. But talking about briefly, yeah, if I may,
yes,
on bylaws, two things. Should anybody who doesn't want short-term letting in their building get their bylaw in place now?
Yes.
Would you? Yes, okay.
Absolutely.
She said that without... I had barely finished the sentence. I hadn't got to the question mark. And Jane says yes.
Lots of schemes, in fact, have had a bylaw on short-term letting for a very long time because it's consistent with the planning laws that they've been operating under. And if there's nothing in the local environment plan, they've brought in their bylaw,
yeah,
to stop it from taking hold. Because one of the things that people find is that once it takes hold, it's very, very difficult to get rid of.
Right.
And
yes,
so that is a real threat for new residential strata schemes.
Yes.
That don't have a settled residential culture and where a developer wants to sell to commercial interests.
Right.
And actually, you know, they use this as a bit of a selling point that people have got a lot of flexibility
right,
now in the way they can use their apartments.
Because it's the ratchet effect of the 25%, you know.
That's right.
It takes you 75% of the vote at a meeting to bring the bylaw in, which means it only takes 25% of owners to prevent the bylaw from coming in.
And that's why, although we are, you know, OCN, I think, ran a really hard campaign called Our Strata, Our Choice.
Yeah.
And if you recall some of the history of this, there was a last-minute backbench or party room revolt.
Yes, I recall it very well.
Cabinet had to go back and look at it again.
Yes.
So the bylaw that we achieved was really at the last moment.
Yeah.
But what they did was they gave it to us, but only on the basis that it's the vote is the normal Section 5 special resolution.
Yes.
What we said, in fact, and what we've said repeatedly, is that this is like a change of use.
Yeah.
And certainly people have different views about that, but this is like a change. This is a change of use. The default should be no short-term letting unless 75% vote
yeah,
in favour of it, like strata renewal.
Yes.
You know, because it's a very significant change in use
yeah,
and it has big impacts on the people who live there.
Absolutely.
One of the impacts that it has, of course, for the buildings that are most affected is that with the bylaw power that the clarification about the bylaw power that we now have, a lot of the most vulnerable residents and people in some of the worst affected buildings already have entrenched illegal short-term letting.
Yes.
That will effectively be legalised once this planning instrument comes in. Those residents will never get that bylaw because they'll never have the numbers to do it.
Yeah.
So this is a devastating, absolutely devastating outcome for those people. And just on that, another thing which is not clear in the discussion paper, it doesn't explain to people clearly, I think, that even if you're, say you're in the CBD, you're in a mixed use or a commercial zone, but you're in a residential building, you have a DA and you have consent conditions that explicitly say no less than 3 months.
Right.
So the planning law advice to us is that the effect of the exempt development instrument is that those conditions are effectively null and void.
Oh, wow.
So none of those buildings have been saved, if you like.
Yeah.
Now, the reason they have those conditions in the first place was to protect them precisely from this problem.
Yes.
But, you know, those were in the days when we respected that we had probably the best, one of the best planning law systems in the world, where we did do strategic planning and separate these incompatible uses. Airbnb comes in, scales up, bulldozes through the planning law and convinces regulators that effectively there's nothing they can do about it. So those people that have suffered because their local council will not enforce the DA now, I think, have truly been abandoned by the state government.
Yeah. Somebody in your building is moving furniture around. This is one of the problems of living in apartments.
Yeah, the joys of apartment living.
Now, and the other thing I wanted to say is that OCN, and that's you'll find OCN at ocn.org.au, OCN actually has an off-the-peg bylaw for short-term letting.
We do. The only protection that the residential schemes are going to have is that bylaw. Planning law is, I think, just not going to save them.
Yeah.
So this is why we felt it was so important. Yeah. And so what we've done is earlier this year, we hired a very experienced strata lawyer who has experience in this particular issue in CBD buildings, who has drafted a very comprehensive bylaw for us, which is focused explicitly on the prohibition for non-resident owners.
Right.
So it will implement the new section 137A of the Strata Schemes Management Act, which has passed through Parliament. It hasn't yet commenced, but schemes are buying it and putting it in place.
Right.
And they're also, of course, those that have already got their bylaw are basically just holding on to the bylaw they've got.
I mean, some of the bylaws, I mean, there's that quite notorious case, I think, in Woollahra, where the teacher took her building bylaw to be, and NCAT said that it was unfair and blah, blah, blah. But that bylaw, I believe, was quite very complicated and specific and actually fell foul of the part of strata law that says you can't interfere with dealing. Whereas if it had been a simpler bylaw, it wouldn't have fallen, or might not have. You can never tell with the tribunal.
I didn't see the bylaw, but I did see the 1.5-page decision. And I have to say it's embarrassing that the tribunal would produce such a poorly reasoned decision. And it was extremely disappointing that the scheme felt that they were unable or didn't wish to appeal it.
Yeah.
I think partly because they knew that state government was actually working on some clarification about the regulatory framework.
Yeah.
In most schemes, their bylaws rely on the existing planning law because the planning law actually currently protects them.
Yeah.
So that you have a kind of a symmetry between the bylaw and the planning law. Once this new state environment policy comes in, of course, those bylaws will need to be changed.
Right.
And they'll need to explicitly implement or amend a bylaw that is specific to the new Section 137A provision, which it only allows a scheme to prevent a non-resident owner from converting to short-term letting. It doesn't allow the owners' corporation, even in fact if the majority of the owners agree, it doesn't allow them to stop a permanent resident from conducting short-term letting in their apartment. So it's kind of half the...
As long as the permanent resident is there.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question, and I think the whole issue about what constitutes a principal place of residence is a whole area of property law that we have not had a very clear analysis or guidance from the Office of Fair Trading. Now that we see the 21-day loophole, as I'm calling it, you really have to question, if that's not going to count towards the 180 days, you know, how much unhosted short-term letting can I do before the council or the Office of Fair Trading or the Department of Planning decides that I'm in fact this is not my principal place of residence.
And the other thing is that it's up to the owners in that building to prosecute the case.
Yes.
There are no strata cops coming around checking up on or you'd say you're doing hosted short-term letting here, but you're not in the building. It's, and that becomes a whole issue of privacy and people basically spying on their neighbours.
Well, that's 180 days unhosted and an unlimited amount of 21 day plus lets unhosted. So I don't actually have to be here. So one of the things that's been lacking all the way through this is there's been no analysis about how this interacts with the New South Wales Strata Schemes Management Act, which is a model which is purely based on long-term residential living.
Yeah.
So there are lots of elements to that model about governance, about notice, about the strata role, a whole lot of things that don't fit with short-term letting because that's not what it was designed for.
And that's not what the apartments were designed
for. And it's not what the apartments were designed for at all, no.
So what else have you got in the planning field?
Well, I think that the conclusion that we've come to at this point is that we really need to see, if this is going to proceed, it really should be, at the very least, a complying development, not exempt.
Mm.
And the reason for that is that in addition to the issues and problems with the cap, one of the things that has been done is quite strong fire standards, which are extremely important, as you know. Not just in regular houses, but particularly important in high-rise buildings because the threat to life from fire is so much greater. And also we know, and it's well accepted, it's part of planning, in fact, that you need to put in extra safety measures when you have short-term letting because it massively increases the risk.
Okay, we're going to take a tiny little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about those fire safety regulations which have been proposed.
Okay.
So we're back. We've covered all the planning stuff. That's all sorted. That'll be fixed. Somebody in government will listen to this podcast and go, oh, we've made a terrible mistake, and they'll fix things. Jane looks like she's trying to reach for something. Are you okay? You've got your...
I'm fine. Fire safety standards in front of me.
Okay, I have them in my head.
Oh, good.
Right. That's good. You can correct me. You can quiz me on this. So one of the documents that came out for discussion is fire safety, and this has been, it looks like the fireys, their paw prints are all over this.
Mm.
You need a smoke alarm in every bedroom. You need a smoke alarm in every corridor leading to a bedroom. You need a heat sensor in your kitchen. You need emergency lighting connected to the smoke alarms that shows the way out of the apartment, and every bedroom door should have a sign or a map on it showing you how to get out of the apartment and how to get out of the building. I think that pretty much covers it. Oh, and all those smoke alarms and heat sensors have to be integrated together.
Mm.
Right.
Yes.
This sounds like it could be quite expensive.
I think it probably is. And the issue of fire is extremely important. And, we should all remember the La Crosse fire, the Bankstown fire, where Connie Zhang very sadly lost her life.
Yep.
Very sad. La Crosse fire, of course, was somebody on a temporary visa smoking on the balcony. Yeah. I think the Connie Zhang fire in Bankstown was somebody leaving a cigarette on the air conditioning unit, which caused with terrible consequences. The NEO 2005.
That was another smoker.
That's right.
If you want it, you don't have to remove flammable cladding from buildings. Just remove smokers.
That's right.
And that will solve the problem.
That will help. It will certainly help. But smoking on balconies, smoking in bedrooms, smoking generally, for people who don't live in residential strata, there's a real serious lack of understanding about the nature of the risk. There are hundreds of buildings with flammable cladding. The issue is not just flammable cladding, obviously. That just accelerates and increases the level of risk. So having mandatory fire standards, and they are mandatory and there are penalties that apply, is extremely important and we support them 100%.
Now, just imagine, and I know this is a stretch of the imagination, that these fire regulations will go through without a certain large global company based in San Francisco, making sure that they don't go through in their current form. Is this... Oh, we get hammering now. This is fantastic. So you got the San Francisco company who are going to try and moderate this. But let's assume that they go through. And the Airbnb host finds there's a bill for several hundred, if not $1,000, to fit all these alarms and these guides on the back of the bedroom door and all that stuff. Does this mean that a lot of people will be put off from even entering the market, or they'll just go underground?
Well, I think that people who want to do the right thing and who then, you know, come to awareness that actually they do have responsibilities towards their guests, but also towards other residents in the building, and that what they're doing, you know, it's a risk to their own property as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's a risk to them. They may well just decide that actually it's just too much hassle, and that maybe this is an industry, quote unquote, that they don't really want to be part of. They thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
But actually it's not that great.
Yeah. I mean, because the whole Airbnb thing happened because people might have thought it might be nice to let our apartment for a couple of months.
Exactly.
But it's too much hassle.
Yeah.
And then all you have to do is take a few pictures, stick them online, and you're in business. So
I think it's a very mixed story, and there's a lot more to it than people realise.
Yeah.
And I think that actually a lot of landlords who have had long-term tenants also find that multiple transactions is, you know, it's not all it's cracked up to be, and it's quite expensive to run. There is a temptation, and I think, you know, one of the issues about the lack of monitoring and being able to enforce compliance is that if you have people doing this and breaching those fire safety standards, then they are putting their guests and everybody else at risk.
Yeah.
And there are significant penalties. And there are significant penalties because it's important.
Yeah.
So right at the, you know, there's one of those fundamental system design questions is how do we make sure that hosts comply with those standards.
Yeah.
And that's why we say it should be a complying development, not an exempt development, because that is the only way that you'll either have a local council officer or a private certifier inspecting the apartment to make sure that there's...
And what's the inspection rules? I mean, the fire inspectors can force owners' corporations to allow them access to apartments unless the people who own the apartments or the residents of the apartments say, we don't want you to come in. And then the owners' corporation is absolved of all responsibility. But where does the responsibility then lie?
Well, that's a good question. I think this is probably one of the many unanswered questions. And in fact, as people read the package, there's lots of unresolved issues.
Yeah.
The discussion paper doesn't offer people answers to those sorts of things. It's quite a passive, quite weak, I think, series of questions without a lot of information to help people form an opinion or even shape their responses in any really detailed way. The issue for the owner's corporation is that it can't carry out those inspections.
Right.
So there's a few issues there. One, we don't know, the owner's corporation wouldn't know whether the Airbnb hosts, whether they're the private individual or an agent, is actually complying. They don't know if the work's been done and whether it's up to standard. They don't know whether it interferes with the building's own embedded fire safety system.
Of course, yeah.
There are a lot of potential issues there. There needs to be a clear way forward. There are already provisions in the EPA that allow an owner to install smoke alarms in their own apartment without having to get permission first.
Yeah.
That was done, I'm sure, for very good reasons, but I'm absolutely confident that it was done without ever envisaging the kind of safety system that is envisaged by this standard for this purpose.
One of the things that occurs to me is that these people who are basically head tenants, so they rent a number of properties and then let them out as Airbnb or stays or whatever properties.
Yes.
This whole fire safety thing is bound to... They can't just come in and start installing smoke alarms. Well, they shouldn't, but...
Well, how would we know? I mean, I think that that's a really interesting and a good point, because I sat on the Code Advisory Committee, and there was certainly advocacy for tenants to be permitted to do this without having the permission of the landlord.
Yep.
And I was at pains to try and explain to people that we're not just talking about an ordinary residential tenant. Most agents wouldn't know if you and I had 1, 2, or 10 residential tenancy agreements. They basically have no way of finding out.
Yeah.
And they were quite shocked to find one building manager I know who manages several buildings became aware that there was the same residential tenant in several of those buildings and turned out to have a residential agreement for 12 separate lots.
But
across three buildings.
I mean, there is an aspect of strata law that says that a change of tenancy in the building must be notified to the owners' corporation. Mm.
Section 258, in fact, has a positive duty imposed on the owner and on an agent to provide notice of a change in occupancy and the details of the tenant within 14 days of the tenancy commencing. That's a perfect example of how the New South Wales Strata Schemes Management Act is designed for normal residential living and not for short-term letting. And that's one of the unresolved issues. The secretaries have of the strata schemes have a strict obligation to maintain the strata role.
Yeah.
The strata role serves a number of functions.
Yeah.
And we have knowledge of who is in occupation of the building for very good reasons.
Yeah.
It's not just the service of documents.
Yeah.
It could be for a range of reasons, including emergencies, etc. So there is a question about whether or not an owner's corporation will in fact be notified when there's a change of short-term let tenancy. They are in fact tenants under the law, under the common law.
Yeah.
So Section 258 actually does apply.
And it's something like is it $200 fine every time you fail?
I think it's more than that.
Oh,
I think it's more than that. Yes.
Well.
Yes.
We've discussed at length the different kinds of, this is off air, we've discussed at length the different kinds of chairpersons you have in a building, but I think if you've got somebody who is obsessively, neurotically checking that every bylaw is being adhered to, maybe this is, their time has come.
I'm moving in with him.
Okay, so the fire regulations, look, they seem quite almost draconian, but perfectly sensible, given that...
Yes.
You know, your holiday let people, they're in holiday mode, so they're not generally taking care of things the same way.
Mm.
And the other thing is that they don't know the layout of the apartment.
No, I think that's really important. I mean, people in a panicked or stressed situation, even if you're familiar with your environment, can get very disoriented very quickly, and that they don't have the benefit of practice drills, which most residents in fact do. They'll know where the exits are. They will have done a number of evacuation drills over the period of time they've lived in a building. And I think we know. I mean, we all travel. You know, we're all tourists. And we're all visitors, and we all know that in an unfamiliar environment, we are slower.
Well, it's just that thing. If you go into a new apartment, when you haven't been in, you visit somebody and it's time to go home, and you get to the entrance hallway and you go, is it left or right?
And I think too that the standards of fire safety have been rising as our knowledge improves. The way buildings are constructed is different.
Yeah.
There's less emphasis on passive fire safety measures, like, you know, nice thick walls.
Yeah.
More emphasis on wet fire safety systems, like sprinklers, which are necessary because the kind of materials, furniture, everything we have in modern homes is far more toxic. The period of time from for the ignition of a fire for you to escape is gone down to something like 3 minutes from, I think it was 28 or 30 minutes.
Wow.
That was the evidence that a fire expert gave to the parliamentary inquiry on building defects.
So that's the amount of time you've got to get out of a building safely.
Out of your apartment.
Right.
The point is that modern buildings, they use materials that are far more toxic. You have much less time to get out of a modern building than you do an older one. Having said that, a lot of the old residential blocks around Sydney, the fire safety standards that were in place when they were built are significantly lower than what we try to have in place now. And the question is, how well have they been maintained?
It's going to be tough.
Yeah,
it's a great opportunity to make sure the building is safe for holiday lets and for everybody else in the building.
That's right.
But I think there's going to be a fight on that.
Well, it will be interesting to see, because I think it will be very difficult for industry to oppose things, measures that keep their guests, their customers safe. I mean, that would be a very telling indictment on them if they oppose fire safety standards.
I've been talking to Jane Hearn, Deputy Chair of the Owners Corporation Network, who has a very interesting perspective on the whole Airbnb regulations and the discussion and debate about them. If you want to make your views heard, you can go to the Planning New South Wales website and make a submission before September 11. We're going to pick up again next week with Jane. As part of our podcast next week, we'll be talking about the register. Who's going to run it? Who's going to be on it? What difference will it make? Now, if you enjoy these podcasts, and I hope you do, or you wouldn't still be listening, please subscribe through whatever method you get them. There's all sorts of things listed on the Flat Chat website. If you want to know more about apartment living, come to flat-chat.com.au. There's all sorts of things there. There's a forum, there's stories. It's very lively. We keep it going every week. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'm Jimmy Thompson. Talk to you next week.